From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Research on autism can take years to trickle down to people affected. An annual conference later this week aims to bring new findings directly to an audience of families, healthcare providers, and educators. Rebecca Landa, founder of the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, gives a preview of her talk on early intervention. She says coaxing preverbal communication in toddlers, like gesturing at objects, is an important place to start.
Look at your child, what he's doing today that he didn't do 2 days ago. That is going to lead us into this next doorway to get into speech.
And Thomas Whalen, who's on the autism spectrum, describes his work with the nonprofit Pathfinders for Autism to educate the community. It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Healthcare professionals, educators, individuals with autism, and their families, these groups don't often get to hear directly from researchers at the front lines of autism research. They'll have that chance later this week at the 18th Annual Autism Conference organized by the Center for Autism and Related Disorders at Kennedy Krieger Institute. The conference is a chance to hear from those who study topics like risk factors for autism, the use of technology to enhance communication, how teachers can help students improve social skills, and more. Joining us is Rebecca Landa. She founded and directs the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, known as CARD, and the Research and Education for Autism and Children program at Kennedy Krieger Institute. She's also professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
This is the 18th year of the conference. How has it changed over that time?
Oh, so much. The one thing that hasn't changed is that we handpick the speakers really carefully because these people are real content experts and they know how to communicate their knowledge in a way that people who aren't scientists can understand. They're very authentic. And so what we have now is that we've grown. We have many more speakers. The conference has grown into a two-day event. We have a mix and mingle at the end of the first day where people can interact and connect with each other as well as with the speakers. And we have a person with autism, in fact, Tom Whalen, who may be on your program later today, who actually speaks about their own experiences.
So, but if it's focused on research, I think people tend to think research ultimately is something that gets passed on in writing. Does this sort of short-circuit this in some way?
Well, let me put it this way. There are a couple of speakers who are researchers, that's what they do for a living. Most of the people who are researchers who speak at our conferences are also clinicians. And in addition to the researchers, we will have people speaking who are clinicians, but all their clinical work and all the things they're talking about are based on research.
So tell me some of the speakers you are excited about.
Well, our opening keynote is going to be Dr. Lisa Wiggins, and she's from the Centers for Disease Control. And the Centers for Disease Control are really at the forefront in helping the world understand how prevalent is autism? What causes autism? And so she's going to be presenting about those innovations. And those things have a big impact on policy and the availability of services. And then our closing keynote is Dr. Brenda Smith-Miles. And she is a clinician researcher who's going to be talking about the hidden agenda. That is, in our everyday world, we understand the cues of what we're supposed to be doing in certain social situations. People with autism have trouble with that. It affects how they make friends, how they succeed in school, and how they do in, dating and getting jobs. And she'll also be talking about managing behavior and supporting self-regulation in people with autism.
So it's a hidden agenda. That people with autism...
No, it's for people with autism, it's like people who don't have autism have a hidden agenda almost, right? Because we all sort of, those of us who don't have autism, we understand each other's nonverbals. people with autism don't understand those nonverbal cues usually.
Yeah.
And they wonder what it is that we're all understanding that they're missing.
That's fascinating. You're going to be presenting at the conference also on early intervention practices for young children with autism spectrum disorder. How early can autism be detected?
You know, here's the interesting thing that we've discovered in our research, where we study infant siblings of children with autism and we follow them into their teen years. And so what we've learned is that in infancy, the signs of autism pretty much aren't there, but they start to emerge in the second year of life. And different children have a different pattern of when those signs appear. But usually they're sometime between the first and second birthday.
And how can you spot them?
Well, if you think about a baby who's typically developing, babies who are typically developing, they are hungry for social interaction. They chase it down. Children with autism are more reserved. They're not initiating social engagement. And when they do, they don't tend to try to keep it going. And another thing that they're not doing very much is that social imitation. Typically developing one-year-olds just want to copy everything they see people doing. You're not going to see that in a child who's starting to show signs of autism. So those are some of the early indicators.
Give me an example of the kind of copying.
Well, for example, using a phone, you know, holding a phone up to your ear. Pretending to eat with a fork. Somebody sent me a picture of their child recently trying to put their shorts on and trying to use their shorts as a hat. You know, these are the kind of things that you might not see in a child who's starting to emerge into autism.
That's Rebecca Landa, director of the Center for Autism and Related Disorders at Kennedy Krieger Institute. Here on The Record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the center's autism conference coming up later this week. So early intervention is a way of when you spot behaviors like that. Really, you're spotting something that's missing in many cases, right?
Yes.
And then you're somehow intervening.
Yes. And here's the thing. The brain is highly responsive to structured experiences. In other words, when you think about a famous baseball pitcher, let's just say, the way that person got to be that good is partly through their neurobiology, but also partly through their practice and having been coached exquisitely. When we think about a child who's not spontaneously learning language, who is not spontaneously learning social interaction skills, this child needs a coach. Usually, we call that a teacher or a speech pathologist. We also can teach parents to become such a coach. And so I'm going to be talking about what are the really potent strategies that parents and teachers and speech pathologists and other clinicians can use to really help children break the code of social interaction, play, and language.
Can you give me an example of what an intervention might be?
Right. So first of all, what you want to do is to make sure that you understand what motivates the child. That's always the very first premise, because you want this child to want to engage with you. And so sometimes you have to use drains or balls or bubbles. And then once you get the child engaged with you, then you start to very systematically structure in opportunities for the child to use the skills that you're trying to build. It's like building a tower with blocks. You have to build certain skills before you can build the next set of skills.
How can you tell if an intervention is working?
Data. You have to know, first of all, exactly what you're trying to teach. That's one of the big tickets to admission, if you will, and that is that you need to know specifically, right now I'm trying to teach this child to gesture with a pointing gesture, to point something out for me. And so I'll know if over time this child is starting to show more and more of those behaviors, for example.
And how do you encourage parents if they get frustrated or they're not seeing a sign that the intervention is working?
I think the biggest thing is that usually intervention does work. And so But what might not be happening is that the child's progress might not be as fast as what the parent wants. So, for example, a child who's not speaking, we have to build a lot of pre-verbal communication skills before we get to first words. Sometimes parents just want those first words. And once we start to show the parents, oh, look at your child, what he's doing today that he didn't do 2 days ago, that is going to lead us into this next doorway to get into speech. Once parents start to see those hierarchies, they relax and they can enjoy their child's development a lot more.
You said a few minutes ago that in infancy, we don't see the signs of autism. Does that mean the autism isn't there?
What the brain research is showing is that by 6 months, the brains of babies who go on to have autism is already different from the brains of babies who don't go on to have autism. But the symptoms aren't there yet. What's there are usually some subtle motor differences. But then over time, the signs of autism start to appear. But we also know about the brain is that there are certain things that can recontour the way the brain is wiring itself. And that really comes down to intervention. Now, I'm not saying that every child can have the same outcome, but I just want to emphasize the power of early intervention.
Yeah, that comes through. What do you want people to take away from the conference?
I want them to come and really feel empowered by the new knowledge that they're going to get. They will get new knowledge. One of the things that we task every speaker with is making sure that people leave their talk with at least 2 to 3, oh, I can go home and do this tonight, or, oh, this is going to happen for me tomorrow. So it's very practical.
It sounds very practical. I'm grateful to you for telling us about it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca Landa is the founder and director of CARD, the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, and of the Research and Education for Autism and Children program at Kennedy Krieger Institute. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have a link to registration information for the conference. I'm Sheila Cass, quick break here on the record. When we're back, a young man with autism tells us about thinking outside the box. Stay with us.
On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. If families looking for resources on autism do an internet search for occupational therapists, say, or advice on individualized education plans, IEPs, or financial guidance, they might turn up thousands of hits, but not results tailored to their specific circumstances. That's where Pathfinders for Autism differs. The nonprofit Pathfinders for Autism links families and individuals with autism to services, making recommendations by age and location, breaking down the intricacies of insurance, and offering direction as children age out of services. I'm joined by Pathfinders Executive Director Rebecca Rienzi. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you for having me.
How did Pathfinders for Autism come to be?
It was founded by a group of parents nearly 20 years ago. That group included B.J. Surhoff, former Oriole player, and his wife Polly, and several other families that were looking for a better way to exchange information.
Do families get in touch with you when they suspect their child may have autism or after there's been a diagnosis?
They do both. We have many families that call and they're suspecting, and we do offer some resources on red flags to look for. In particular, we will link them actually to the Centers for Autism-Related Disorders information and red flags list. But many times it's after the diagnosis and they just don't know where to start. So they've gotten that diagnosis either from a school or from a medical professional, and they need to know what the next step is going to be, and we'll help them in that path.
What types of services are you able to refer families to?
really anything that they're looking for. So for instance, if they need some type of service provider, whether that be occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapy, behavioral therapy, we can link them to a service in their community. But also things like legal resources, financial resources, where to get a child's haircut, where the person might be more sensitive to some of the challenges an individual with autism face. So we try to find any kind of resource in the community a family might need.
Besides getting connected to services and providers, Pathfinders for Autism organizes field trips and social activities for families. Tell us about that.
Yes, we have a program where we are getting families out into the community in a social setting. So it's our family recreational program is what we call it. But the real goal of that is to get folks out, not to be isolated. A lot of times when there is a loved one with a disability, families tend to isolate because being out in the community may be challenging. For someone with autism, those challenges can be sensory. Those challenges can be how other people react to them. So our program gets the whole family out maybe to a ball game or to the National Aquarium or the Maryland Zoo in a very supportive environment. So there's no cost to the family to attend. We will have worked with the venue staff when possible to increase their sensitivity about some of the behaviors they may see. It's also very supportive because you're out with hundreds of other people that really understand your child's behavior. And so you don't get some of the negative feedback that some of our families will encounter when they're out.
How does Pathfinders raise the money for the services you offer?
We have a variety of mechanisms that we do that. We have some fantastic donors that support our events. We have several foundations that underwrite the visits too that we do for recreation. But we also have grants that support our other programs. And of course, we have special events. We just had a special event at the Maryland Zoo that was a lot of fun. And we have other events throughout the year, like a golf tournament and celebrity fashion show.
To raise money.
To raise money, yes.
Pathfinders for Autism aims to serve people with autism across all ages. How do services for adults differ from what's available for children?
It's quite different. So for children, particularly in the education system, the services under the IDEA, the federal law that protects education for all individuals with disability, requires that the individual get services in school. So up until the individual leaves school, whether that's age 18 or 21, they're guaranteed some services under the law. Once you leave the school system, services are no longer guaranteed. So you have to meet a certain criteria to get adult services. And so first you have to meet that criteria, and then you often have to get on waiting lists for those services. So for instance, residential services are, not readily available. So if an individual needs that kind of care and support, they may have to wait 5, 6, 10 years before a residential facility is available for them to live in. We also really want the state and the advocacy community is very much looking at opportunities for employment, and we want our individuals with disabilities out in the community working. And so there's a shortage of programs that can do that effectively. So you're not always having the right opportunities there as well.
That's Rebecca Rienzi, Executive Director of Pathfinders for Autism, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Pathfinders is a nonprofit that links families and individuals with autism to healthcare providers, therapies, and social activities, as well as information about advocacy. I want to draw Thomas Whalen, who has autism, into our conversation. Thomas, welcome to On The Record.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate this.
How did you get connected with Pathfinders?
I used to attend social groups at the Husband Center over in Towson, and I was doing this program called ALPS, which stands for Adults Learning Pragmatic Skills.
Adults Learning Pragmatic Skills, uh-huh.
Yes, and I got this invite through the Husband Center saying, hey, there's this group called Pathfinders. They're doing a training called Be Safe, which is a nationwide thing. Would you be interested in going? And I didn't want to say, grudgingly, yeah, sure, I'll go. This could be fun. But that's kind of what it was. Why not? I have nothing better to do. But it's... Be Safe was, and still is, I think it's still around, a training program for law enforcement officers, like cops, sheriffs, just basic law enforcement, on how to safely interact with people with disabilities and vice versa. And I walked away going, I really like this. This is really cool. Been working for them since late 2016, and I've loved every minute of it.
What is it that you love about it?
Look, I'm a talker. I love talking to people. And especially if it's something that's, like, very important to me, like autism. Whenever I do a training, there's something I always look forward to each and every single time I do a training. And this holds true to the conference we're doing on Friday, too. I always have a Q&A session at the end, like, you know, does anyone have any questions? If so, feel free to ask.
Well, that first experience you described was with law enforcement.
Yeah.
What other kinds of groups have you had sessions with?
Well, it's mostly hospital staff, like medical students, like medical professionals and trainees, you know? And I've been in and out of hospitals. I'm 28. I've been in and out of hospitals. I have, like, legitimate health issues apart from my autism. And I love the fact that I get paid to go to a hospital and not stay there, you know? That's, like, the best feeling in the world for me. Like, yes, I get to go home today, you know?
Rebecca, what else does Pathfinders do to try to educate the community about autism?
Well, we have, as Tom spoke about, we have a lot of different training. So we work a lot with first responders. As noted, we do training for police, fire, EMS, and hospitals. In addition to that, we work a lot with local school systems to train both their teachers and lay professionals that might be working with students. We also work with other business sectors that you might not think about. We've trained restaurant staff, hotel staff. We've been to libraries. So any business sector that is interested in learning how to better serve their clients that might come in to utilize their business, we're also their coworkers. That's been a trend we're seeing as well, where businesses have individuals with autism working with them, and their peers and their management want to better understand how to support them in the work environment.
So is this mostly businesses reaching out to Pathfinders, or are you looking for businesses that you think need some education?
Both. So we proactively have we're reaching out to hospitals to train, as well as first responders. It seemed to be sort of this mutual need. We recognize the need as a community that our first responders needed support. At the same time, they were reaching out saying we recognize that we need support. So it kind of works both ways. We have hospitals calling us, we have police departments calling us, but we're also proactively going out to the community.
Tom, as you mentioned, you'll be speaking at the annual autism conference.
Yes. Held
by Kennedy Krieger Center for Autism and Related Disorders. Mm-hmm. What will you be speaking about?
I have to give credit where it's due. My sister Caroline is 2 years younger than me. She's doing it with me. So thanks, Caroline, for that. I'm just speaking, you know. Caroline's the one who's done the majority of the work. You know, we have a slide presentation, a PowerPoint presentation called A Spectrum of Success. She came up with that title herself. I'm like, I love it. Thank you.
So this is about a spectrum of success.
Yes.
And how families work at it together.
The presentation is, for the most part, it is all about me, because I can't, not to sound ignorant, self-centered, or whatever you want to call it, but I'm just one person, you know. I cannot speak for every single person on the spectrum, and I'm not going to pretend to do that. But Caroline is giving her POV as, you know, this is what it's like for me growing up with somebody on the spectrum. So it'll be interesting to see both sides of the story here.
And I take your point that you can't speak for everybody with autism, but what would you like people listening to this to know about autism?
You know, I've had a lot of experiences with autism, positive and negative. You know, I'm not going to say, oh, it's all been sunshine and daisies, you know, but at the same time, I'm not going to say my life's been a living hell because of my autism. You know, I'm not that guy. You got to take the good with the bad. And my life has been nothing short of incredible because of my diagnosis, but what I want people to know about me and my autism, instead of generalizing, is I know a lot of people on the spectrum who are like-minded. Like, yes, we have the same diagnosis, but of autism, we're so vastly and insanely different. It's kind of funny. It's like, what do you have? Autism? What do you think? Totally different than you. And one of the most offensive questions I've ever been asked that I can say on the radio is, if they found a cure for autism, would you want it? You know, it's a legitimate question, but I almost take offense to it when somebody asks me that, like, do you want a cure for being normal? You know, no, I am who I am. I wouldn't change myself or anyone else for anything, you know?
It's a real pleasure to talk to you, Thomas. I appreciate your coming in.
Same. I appreciate you having me.
And Rebecca, thank you to you also.
Thanks for having me.
Rebecca Rianzi is Executive Director of Pathfinders for Autism. Thomas Whalen works with Pathfinders. He'll be speaking about living with autism at the 18th Annual Autism Conference in Baltimore that takes place Thursday and Friday. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we've got links to Pathfinders for Autism and to the conference. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.